Small businesses come in many shapes and sizes, but the one thing they all have in common? The need to grow. With free guidance, knowledge, tools, and training, Vodafone VHub is here to help you and your business. Chat with a Vodafone VHub business advisor for free and get invaluable insight into how you could grow your business online. Search Vodafone VHub.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Galazzo, joined by Peter Flaherty on opening day, MLB opening day, for those of you who do not celebrate and follow college baseball like Peter and I do. But again, you're listening to this podcast and you're listening to the BA feed, so odds are you do. But happy opening day, Peter. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. I'm a little more excited today that it's opening day. We've also got the Sweet 16 tonight, the Elite Eight this weekend. Not to brag, but in contributing to the inane banter portion of the podcast, I had it queued up that I've got 13 of the Sweet 16 still alive in my bracket, so not a big deal.
I actually have no clue how my one bracket is doing. I basically just take UNC and put them in the championship game each year and then essentially guess on all the other ones, because I just don't put any time into it at all. I'm more excited that UNC is still alive. They were a one seed, so maybe it might be surprising for people to hear that I'm relieved they're still alive, but I would say this is a one seed that I was not super confident in for UNC. Like, on their day, they look great, but they've just been so inconsistent. But I'm happy they're still alive. It is a big sports day for me, for you, but especially for me since UNC is also playing tonight. So I'm basically just looking forward to recording this podcast with you, Peter, recording a podcast with Ben later in the afternoon, and then just watching as much big league baseball as I can.
I'm right there with you, except we've got college action today too, so I'll be all over. There's at any level, regardless of what kind of fan you are, there's a ton of baseball on for you today.
Absolutely, and I wanted to briefly touch on that because we do have some college series this weekend. You wrote about it in your What to Watch For weekly piece today that's on the site. If you guys are listening, you can see that now. But we've got some of these series starting on Thursday. Most weeks, I think that's great just because Thursday night, Thursday afternoon, typically there's not a ton competing for college baseball. But on opening day, maybe this would be the one week where I wish every college season series would start on Fridays. But we have some really compelling ones. Peter, do you want to get into anything that you have on the site that you want to just give people a heads up for? We'll do our housekeeping kind of at the beginning of the episode today.
Yeah, super quick. My weekly What to Watch For piece comes out every Thursday. Go in depth on four or five series that I think are intriguing, and then also link where to watch the BA top 300 prospects. And then also every Thursday, the College Pod with Teddy comes out every Friday. Today, when you're listening to it with Carlos, the Draft Podcast, Carlos and I also release the weekly hot sheet, the college hot sheet, every Tuesday. Teddy and I drop the top 25 every Monday. And then next Wednesday, I will have the top 50 2026 college guys out. I know it seems kind of crazy to already be putting together a list like that. It's going to be more of a having the right guys on there type of ranking than it will be an actual, it'll be a ranking, but the main focus is just getting the right guys on there. So there's going to be changes in so many of them everywhere, but it'll be fun to just kind of highlight some of the standout freshmen at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to that. For my side of things, I've got a piece just kind of recapping a bunch of notes from LSU Florida last weekend that I got to see. Maybe we can touch on that a little bit in today's podcast episode. But that's a pretty beefy piece. And LSU and Florida obviously have a lot of draft talent every year. That's still the case this year, even with LSU maybe taking a little bit of a step backwards. Although I think that's understandable. You can't really expect a 2023 LSU each season and in perpetuity, even if LSU has a claim to maybe the most impressive college baseball program in the country. So that's on the site for you to see. There's a lot of MLB preview content on the website right now. We're still rolling out notes on prospects pretty consistently on the new Prospect Wire. Matt Eddy has a fun piece on PPI eligible players who made opening day rosters. So if you are super in the weeds on the nuances of prospect eligibility for the PPI picks and draft incentives, then that's a piece maybe you can just skim through to see which players might give their teams a chance to add an extra pick in the draft in the future. In addition to just a ton of content from spring training, Josh, JJ, Jeff have been out there. Ben has been doing some international trips. So it's really, everything is full steam ahead. We've got baseball really in every level rolling this weekend. So that's fun to see. It's kind of the time that all baseball fans have been waiting for. And for BA, it's kind of the last little gate we have to break through to just get everything rolling. So it'll be fun. I'm excited to watch some big league baseball. But today we're talking draft, Peter. We have a few players that we want to get into. But I'm curious what you thought of the LSU-Florida series. I got in-person looks at Jack Caglione and Tommy White. So that was good for me just to refresh some looks on those two players. I don't know that my opinions on them have changed too dramatically based on that weekend look, but I'm curious what you've thought of them so far this season, if there are any other players from the series you want to touch on.
Yeah, I think from a team standpoint, and Teddy and I talked about it yesterday, I left this weekend almost just more befuddled by both. Florida is confusing for a lot of reasons. LSU, I'm still not quite sure what to make of them. They're going to have another really tough series this weekend against Arkansas. And if they lose that one, I know that the LSU fans and the people down in Baton Rouge will kind of be freaking out a little bit, but I still won't be pushing the panic button. I think they can kind of get rolling here soon, but the lineup certainly isn't as deep as it was last year. But like you said, Carlos, it's a really high standard to hold the team to, and they've still done relatively well. And then when you get to the big draft prospects like Jack Caglione and Tommy White, my opinion on him hasn't really changed. I think we talked about it last week a little bit. Tommy White for me is a late first round, early second round type. Caglione is a one of one type talent, a premium athlete. He's a 6'5 Adonis at the plate. It's double plus bat speed with double plus power to boot. I still kind of worry about the miss and the chase a little bit. And then on the mound, again, he's a really elite mover. I think the adjustments that he made in the offseason have clearly paid dividends. The command is still a little bit erratic at times, but less so than it was last year, and certainly more consistently around the zone than he was last year, which I think is a very positive development. It's a plus changeup to go along with a thunderous fastball, a very effective cutter. I kind of wrestle with where I think he's going to end up long term, because I do think when all is said and done, like, you're going to have to pick one. I don't want to take the stance of like two-way players don't exist, because I think it's drastic both now and then also going forward. But when you look at the guys who can do both effectively at the major league level, like, you're looking at one guy, and it's Shohei Ohtani, and it's, you can't comp anyone to that. So when I've been evaluating Caglione, he is a one of one type talent at the college level. But when you divide him into a hitter and a pitcher, both are still, they have their extremely positive qualities. But like, when it comes to where I would draft that, I'm not sure. I think he's going to end up going probably in the top 5 to top 10. I don't think he's going to make it out of that range. There's so much appealing about the overall profile that it's just not going to drop that far. But, when evaluating myself, I've kind of looked at him as two different players, and I think he's more like back half of the first round, at least for me, which I know sounds really harsh, but he's going to go in the top 5, top 10. He's going to even be in that top 3 conversation. So,
yeah, I was very interested in seeing how the swing had maybe looked a little bit different, if the approach looked different in person, because if you look at his, just as a hitter right now, he has taken a pretty solid step forward in the walk rate. He's cut the strikeout rate essentially in half. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how much of that was due to just maybe getting through the easy portions of the schedule, or maybe people pitching around him more without Wyatt Langford in that lineup. But I didn't really notice too much of a different approach. It was kind of the same power over hit sort of offensive profile that I think he is in these games this weekend. There were a lot of non-competitive swings against sliders in particular, but I think secondaries in general seem to be a bit of a bugaboo for Caglione. I mean, he's a guy who gets away with having less than ideal mechanics in the box. It's a really pull heavy approach. The lower half is leaking out, I would say, a majority of the time. But even still, he has so much strength that it's not really a problem for him at the college level. He hit 2 home runs. think in total the weekend that I saw, he went 3 for 12. But both the home runs were monstrous. I mean, he can get the ball out of the ballpark in a hurry. In BP, it was just some really eye-opening homers to the pull side, which I was kind of expecting to see. But I really don't think there is a significant change in approach, at least this weekend, compared to maybe my expectations or hopes coming into the series. So I'm curious how he'll look against secondaries moving forward against more ACC competition, and just the ABs he takes. Because, again, like, you can't argue with the results. He's hitting 402, 479, 775. He's got 12 homers. He's got more walks than strikeouts. All of that looks good. I just wonder, like, what kind of a hitter is he going to be at the next level in pro ball? He's going to have to do a better job adjusting to secondaries. And I would imagine, too, he's going to want to try and stay through more of the middle of the field just to keep himself more competitive on the outer half or the outer third against pitchers who are more able to exploit maybe some pull-heavy tendencies. He gets overshifted a lot, which is unsurprising. But I guess I'm just curious, like, how the hit tool will evolve, especially like you. I don't think that in the long run he's going to be doing both. At some point, I think he'll have to pick one. And I wonder and I hope that if he does scrap pitching and starts to focus on hitting, we'll see some significant steps forward. Because just the bat speed and the physicality and the power, he's got such tremendous upside as a hitter. I think that if you're drafting him that high, a big part of your evaluation for him in that range is the expectation that he is such a great athlete and has such monumental tools that he's going to take a step forward when he's just focusing on one side of the ball or not.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think when he inevitably focuses on, like you said, one side of the baseball, wherever he ends up, it's going to gain polish. It's going to improve as a whole. And you talk about the strength, and like, there was a home run, and I think I sent the screenshot in our PA Slack, but I forget what game it was, but it was somewhat recently, like in the last 10 days to 2 weeks. And it was, I think, a left on left breaking ball. His lower side was completely like it was almost like square with the center fielder and pitcher. And he still was able to hit a backside home run. And like, it wasn't like the prettiest looking operation just because he completely flew open, but it's such a testament to his bat speed and the strength and raw power he has. Like, he is a really, really special player. I don't know when or even if we're going to see someone like him again at the college level. So I'm going to enjoy watching him for the next, month to hopefully 2 months. And I'm really excited to see what happens once he gets into pro ball. But yeah, for now, I'm looking forward to the rest of SEC play.
Absolutely. On the bump, it was pretty standard fare for Caglione. It was 5 walks, 5 strikeouts, I believe. He threw 7 solid innings. He's sitting in the 94-95 mile per hour range. He topped out at 97 in this look, but was pretty consistently 96-97 deeper into the start when he needed to reach back for some more. I thought the changeup, you mentioned it being a plus pitch, I thought it was pretty clearly his best offering in this look, even despite, I think there's some pretty clear arm speed differences between the fastball and changeup still, but it's still nearly a 20 mile per hour difference in velocity between the fastball and changeup at this point. It was a consistent pitch that was getting righties and lefties out in front, uncomfortable, out of sync, swinging over the pitch. He could double up on it at times. And even me, like, sitting in the press box, I felt like each time he threw the changeup, I could kind of tell with the arm speed. So I'm assuming good hitters are going to be able to pick that up at the next level, but just the velocity gap alone and the movement profile of that pitch made it effective even though. So I think, again, similar talking about him as a hitter and the strides he can make if he's just focusing on one, if he were to drop hitting and focus on pitching, I think he is a good enough athlete to where he could make the adjustments to make some tweaks there to improve the arm speed on the changeup to make it even better or even more consistent. I think in his like direction with his lower half and his delivery, there are times where he's kind of fighting himself to get back over the plate, and he'll miss arm side pretty consistently with the fastball. That was an issue in this look, like the slider, cutter, whatever we want to call that pitch. I think it's kind of odd that he calls it a cutter, given the velocity. It's more in like the low 80s, and I feel like it had more movement than like a typical cutter. So whether or not it's a slider and a cutter, and it's like he's manipulating them and kind of going in between, that pitch, I thought, could be more consistent moving forward. And I would imagine if he was just focusing on pitching, that would pretty quickly take a step forward. So there's a lot of really exciting pieces to Caglione. He is one of the most fascinating players in this draft class, just given what he's done and the tools that he has. But he's fascinating. He's really hard for me to sort of peg in my mind where I would take him. I think you're spot on. Like if he doesn't go inside the top 10 picks, I would be surprised, just given how unique of a talent he is. But I think a lot of the college players you're taking at the top of the draft, you feel good about them being reasonably polished and you don't need a ton of work to them. Caglione is one of these players where you can still dream on a lot of potential moving forward with him, which is kind of exciting. And for teams who like to take huge shots, I imagine that'll be really, really hard for them to pass up. So that's kind of all I have on Caglione at this point. He's been quite good. I imagine he's still in the running for ACC Player of the Year. Just given the two-way factor is going to set him apart from so many players. But what about Tommy White, Peter?
Man, with White, it's kind of a similar stance to where I was last week. Not a lot is going to change in a week's time. Like, it's a really intriguing hit power combo. There's also a little bit of chase concerns with White. But I think he's honestly, like, he's a pretty good athlete in the box. I think he moves well. He's obviously got an advanced feel for the barrel, super quick hands. He can hammer the baseball to all fields. Like, it's plus power, plus hit for me. I just worry long-term that he's eventually just a right first baseman. And then in that profile, you obviously have to be super, super convicted, at least in the range that we're talking about, to pull the trigger on someone like that. And I think for as appealing as White's offensive profile is, I think that there are others out there that have kind of positioned themselves, namely like Billy Amick. Cam Smith is another one. There are other guys out there too, but I think for as good as the offense is, he's eventually just going to kind of settle into that back end of the first round type range, maybe even early second. But again, like I said last week, I do think that someone in like the mid to late 20s is going to pop that and pull the trigger and not let it slide anymore.
Yeah. And he's been off to a slower start still for his standards. Last weekend, let me see here. I got it in the piece that I wrote. He went just 1-for-12 against Florida on the year. He's hitting .321, .411, .557, pretty significantly off the pace for his full seasons in 2022 and 2023. I think just the lack of power that he's shown so far this year is probably the biggest difference in those seasons. The strikeout rate is down pretty significantly. The walk rate is up a little bit. I actually thought he did look a little bit more patient in some of his at-bats compared to what he looked like a year before, and maybe just the difference in having Dylan Cruz hitting in front of you and him being on base and trying to drive in runs. And now Tommy White is kind of the focal point in this LSU offense. Maybe that has shifted his approach. Maybe it's just like a natural progression of the approach. But I was more impressed with his approach and the patience and the selectivity he showed throughout the weekend than I expected to be, just given how aggressive he was chasing out of the zone. Entering the year, I thought there were some pretty good takes that he made on the borderline of the zone that previously I would have expected him to make. But even still, he's going to need to dial up the power as we get into SEC play more because of those defensive profile questions. And I think most of the industry is pretty much in line with what you're saying, Peter, on the defensive profile. The expectation is that he's going to move to first base. There has been some talk about White's improved defensive ability this spring just because he's gotten leaner. He had a shoulder injury that he battled through last year. He had operation to take care of that over the offseason and worked hard on just getting his body into better shape. It was kind of, I wouldn't say Jekyll and Hyde. He made most of the plays that he was expected to make when I saw him, including one pretty impressive backhand coming over the third base bag where he threw on the run to first that I just didn't expect him to make. But then later in the series, there was a forehand play that he didn't get a glove on, and I think most pro third baseman and definitely MLB third baseman are expected to make that. So I think just his lack of range, his really slow running ability, I think he put in some pretty ridiculously slow run times from home to first this weekend. So I think those are ultimately going to push him over there. But it will be interesting to see if a team takes him and at least lets him try to play third. That seems to be kind of how teams operate at the top of the draft when they're taking players of this sort of profile. If they played it in college, they at least get a chance. at the next level. But yeah, I think ultimately as he gets older, the mobility is just going to only decrease, I would imagine.
Keep going. I was going to say, not to kill him, like right now you're kind of looking at, when you peel back all the layers, and he's a really exciting player, he plays with kind of this infectious swagger. But when you peel all of the layers back, it's kind of a two-tool guy. And I think that you're going to have to be, at least in the range that's a little rich for me, you have to really be pounding the table on the bat and be convicted that not only the power and the hit are plus, but that he is going to hit his way to the major leagues and be an impact bat at the major leagues. Like, that's, if a team is convinced of that, he's going to go, like, he'll go probably top 20. Like, if a team inside the top 20 is convinced on that, that's where he'll go. But I think, again, eventually he'll settle into that 25 to 35 type range. And I think even if he goes in that area, he'll at least get a chance to prove himself over at third to start, and they'll try and work with him a little bit. I think it'd be insane to just relegate him to first base right out of the gate. But I'm curious to see how the defense progresses, because I do think long term he eventually just makes the shift over to first base. And who knows, like, he does have the offensive ability to be that type of impact bat all the way through the minors and then even up until the big leagues. Am I convicted of that right now? No, but like I said, it is plus power, it's probably plus hit, and it's another kind of intriguing conundrum-y profile in this year's draft.
Yeah, definitely. And then one other player I wanted to mention, at least on the podcast here from this series, was Luke Holman. He had a pretty phenomenal night on Friday, struck out 13 batters in 6 innings. The fastball looked really solid. The slider was a great complement to that pitch. Also had a solid curveball as well. He's just been pretty excellent this year. Just one hiccup last weekend coming into this series. On the year, it's a 0.78 ERA over 6 starts, 34 innings. 42.1% strikeout rate and a 6% walk rate. He's always had a sub 10% walk rate, which is solid. It's even better this year, a few ticks below what he did with Alabama in 2022 and 2023. Really, I think the critique for Holman entering the series, entering the season, is that the stuff is not quite as loud as teams maybe want of a first round pitcher. He was in the 91 to 94 mile per hour range pretty consistently, and this looked. But I thought he did a good job of holding that velocity. He touched some 3s and 4s in his final innings. And really, the location and his usage of the fastball and slider, I thought he optimized pretty well. I think his fastball has solid riding life. And he was mostly at the top of the zone and missing above it, which I think are good places for him to miss with his fastball and fastball shape. And then, again, pretty good job of locating the slider down in the zone. It was his best swing and miss pitch for him. He generated 12 whiffs. It was a weapon versus lefties and righties. Again, I thought the curveball was another solid pitch to add to his arsenal. That's just a bit of a different shape. It's a little bit slower, more of a top-down look, less sweet than the slider. So overall, he looked really good, and it's hard to look at his production performance this year and not think of him as like a back-of-the-first-round sort of talent. I know it seems like some teams are maybe more comp or just behind that range, but as he continues to post and as he continues to throw strikes, it just looks more and more impressive for Luke Holman. So it was a really, really strong outing for him. And I was pretty impressed with just the pitchability that he showed.
You summed it up perfectly with Holman. I think it's not the most overwhelming stuff, but I think you've got a no doubt starter with a advanced 4-pitch mix. He's consistently around the zone. The slider is plus, the curveball is more than serviceable, uses the fastball well. And I think above all else, like, he really, really knows how to pitch, which I think in today's game is super valuable. And like you said, I think that while there are guys that kind of are more advanced when it comes to the stuff and they have a louder arsenal, for me at least, he does also fit in that Tommy White type range, like back first comp round. I think if you can get him if he somehow falls to the second round, even the early second round, I think that is a mega steal at this point. And I was most impressed too with how he's able to bounce back. He got hit around a little bit 2 weeks ago now at Mississippi State. I was interested to see how he'd respond, especially against the Florida lineup. For as confusing as Florida is as a team, the one thing that's not really confusing is they have a deep lineup with a lot of guys who can swing it. And
he made him look silly. He made him look silly in this game. There were tons of whiffs. The defense really wasn't working much behind him because he was striking out so many batters. So it was really impressive. I don't know, he had mentioned that what he was focused on is like staying through his lower half more consistently. I think in his previous weekend's outing, he thought he wasn't using the lower half as much, and the velocity suffered and fell off a little bit quicker. And like I said, I thought he held the velo pretty well for how hard he throws. And it'll be interesting to compare and contrast Holman to some of the other pitchers in this class, because we do have a lot of pitchers who are much more explosive on the pure stuff side of things and are much less refined in terms of their pitching ability. So just having him thrown into there with like a Trey Savage, who I think is also a pretty advanced pitcher, maybe a Drew Beam, who we haven't talked about too much, who I would also put in that sort of phylum of prospect compared to your Brody Brex, your Chase Burns, and your Hagen Smiths of the world. But yeah, that was a good look for him. Any other players you want to mention in this series, or should we get into some intriguing guys who are maybe further down the board but climbing?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about using Indeed is how it does a lot of that organizational work for me. I can sort through candidates. I can respond to them. I can schedule interviews all through Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Small businesses come in many shapes and sizes, but the one thing they all have in common? The need to grow. With free guidance, knowledge, tools, and training, Vodafone VHub is here to help you and your business. Chat with a Vodafone VHub business advisor for free and get invaluable insight into how you could grow your business online. Search Vodafone VHub.
I think for Florida, Colby Shelton's one. For me, it's like plus power. He doesn't have to sell it all to get into it. It's a really quiet, simple swing that he's able to generate impressive impact with. I think if the key for him is just one, continuing to showing a little bit of a refined hit tool, proving his defensive chops. And if he can continue to produce as SEC play rolls on, he's probably like a top, like if he hits an SEC play, not a lot of people are going to pass up on that for very long. Like I think he's a top.
The power and the production and him moving to shortstop, I think, are all going to be really compelling. Like left-handed hitter with that sort of juice is an exciting package. How enthused are you with his shortstop defense? Because I was glad to see him play shortstop, but I still think ultimately he probably fits better at second or third. Like he made all the routine plays. I think he's got solid arm strength. I just feel like the actions and the exchange is maybe a little bit light. He didn't ever feel like he looked like a pro shortstop to me. Not to say that like he definitely can't. It's just if I had to pick today, I would imagine he moves to third or second at the next level with some better, slicker, quicker defensive shortstop moving him off the position. But I do think he's got enough thumb to profile really nicely at either third or second.
Yeah, it was impressive that he made the move. I think the reports were positive coming out of Gainesville in the fall, and I liked what I had saw, at least initially on synergy. But I'm with you that professionally he probably ends up being third base, second base, leaning more towards third for me. But I think the bat's going to be able to produce enough for him. But he was another guy I thought was intriguing. And then just like running through really quickly, LSU has two underclassmen that I like. Jake Brown, especially an outfielder. Steven Malam, infielder that I like. Brown, I like more than Malam. I think he's going to be a really, really good one. Jared Jones has easy plus raw power. He literally looks like an NFL tight end. And I mean that in the most complimentary way. Like he is freaking huge. Running through the other guys. Like I know you got a good look at Michael Braswell.
I think I'll probably hire on Michael Braswell than most of them, just because I like the way he picks it. I thought he put together some competitive ABs, but he certainly doesn't have the tools that are going to be really screaming at teams to pop him. So I'll be curious where he winds up in the draft. I thought he has a chance to play his way into like a day two position. I know there are scouts who think he's more of a day three type of guy, especially considering like just comparing and contrasting him to Jordan Thompson from last year with LSU, who was a 15th rounder. So that one will be interesting. But there's ton of notes on the series and all these players we talked about and more that we have not mentioned and probably won't get into on the podcast. You can see that on the site right now. But Peter, there are a few other players I want to get into who are pretty fascinating. We've got a pitcher, we've got a two-way player, and we've got a hitter. Where do you want to start?
I'll go wherever you want to go. We were just talking hitters, so maybe we could start off with an arm. Well, I guess we were talking arms too, but we can start with an arm.
Yeah, let's go with Ryan Johnson at Dallas Baptist. He was a prominent member of the hot sheet this week, just coming off a phenomenal game where he struck out, I believe, 15. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Peter. But on the 15. Season, Ryan Johnson has a 1.93 ERA in six starts, 42 innings. He has a 40% strikeout rate, just a 3.2% walk rate, which is pretty compelling considering Ryan Johnson, to me, if you just look at him throwing on the mound, he screams reliever, but he's pitching like a starter. And I think he also has a very unique arsenal and just pitch profile. And I think he's going to be a fascinating player because he just looks so odd on the mound. If you look at his delivery, it's very unorthodox. It's very rigid and stiff. It's a sidearm slot. He kind of is moving a little slower at the start and speeds up into his stride. There's some effort and stiffness, but again, he's throwing a ton of strikes. He has a really strong track record of throwing strikes. After splitting time as a starter and reliever in 2022, he was a full-time starter for DBU last year and was solid. And this year, he's only taken a step forward. So what are your thoughts on Ryan Johnson, who I feel like has one of the more unusual scouting reports in the class?
Yeah, he's a really funky guy, both when it comes to the look you get of him on the mound and then also the profile in general, because like you said, like he's a 6'6", 6'7" kid. The delivery, if you have a chance to go watch video, it's super unique. It starts out pretty normal and then it gets sped up and it's almost like a slide step to the plate. And you mentioned he attacks from this extremely low three quarters, almost, it's really more of a sidearm slot. The fastball velo is premium. Like, that's the one thing that concerns me about him is the fastball. He gets no misses really with the fastball. And I think it was, at least to this point this year, it's an 8% in zone miss rate. It's sub 20 overall.
Yeah. He sits 93, 94. He touches 98. And like you said, you had the in zone miss rate. It's a 16% miss rate overall. I mean, fastballs generally don't have super high miss rates, but that would be pretty low. Especially considering the velocity. And I talked to some scouts who just like think the pitch has a really inefficient shape, I guess, given his arm slot where he's throwing from. Like, it has a lot of cutting life, but I don't think, like, paired with how he delivers the ball, it really works for him. And if you just look at what batters are hitting against the fastball compared to his slider and his cutter, it's definitely his worst pitch. And he also uses the pitch much less frequently than you would think. He's throwing a 94 mile per hour fastball just basically 30% of the time and really pitching off the slider about 50% of the time. And then his cutter usage is up significantly from last year. He's using that pitch 20% of the time and it's looked effective. So it's just a really odd fastball profile.
Yeah. And it plays well up into the arm side. Like, that's where he's getting a lot of his misses this year. The slider is his bread and butter. Like you mentioned, like, he pitches off of his slider, which it's interesting, and it's this plus sweeper. It's plus to me, at least. Then he's also mixing in this cutter, which is essentially just a shorter version of his slider. It's shorter and harder. It's like mid-80s compared to the low to, it's like compared to his 80 to 84 mile an hour slider. I think the uniqueness makes the profile a lot of fun. I really like the body. He'll get a chance to start, but it's so hard for me, at least right now, until the heater improves. Like, it's plus control and command. Slider is plus. The cutter's effective. just to me right now. He's a two pitch guy that I think could be really, really good in a bullpen and in the back end of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. He'll get a chance to start, but it's a little hard for me, at least right now, to get out of the reliever camp. Mm-hmm. But again, though, there is a lot to like. So it's going to be an interesting arm to watch develop. I'm curious to see what org he ends up with, because if he ends up with one of these organizations that's really, really keen at developing pitching, I think it makes him a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. But at least for me right now, he's a reliever. I'm still taking that like early to mid second, probably middle of the second round, given how he's done this year, assuming he continues to perform. There are some positive traits, but for me, he's like 55 to 70 or so right now.
Yeah. He's a really interesting pitcher. Like you said, I'll be fascinated to see who ends up drafting him and what they try and do with the fastball, because it's a lot of arm talent. I mean, this is a guy who's touching 98 from really what I think would be an inefficient delivery. I mean, maybe the uniqueness of the delivery adds some deception and helps it play up, and he clearly can throw strikes from that operation. It's really with all three of these pitches, he's throwing strikes at a high clip. So whether teams try and change the shape of the fastball or just continue to maybe dial in the pitch usage, which it seems like he's already doing in college. I mean, the fact that he can throw this hard, but he's dialing down his fastball usage just kind of tells you the confidence in the pitch and how he's preferring just to use the slider and the cutter. Right now, as we record this podcast, he's third in strikeouts among Division I pitchers. He's got 64 Ks. That's behind only Riley Huge at Winthrop, who leads the country with 71, and Chase Burns at 68. And it's also two strikeouts ahead of Hagen Smith. So, I mean, I would imagine Chase Burns and Hagen Smith continue to dominate this strikeout board throughout the spring if they stay healthy, knocking on wood for that. But the fact that Johnson is up here with really better control and command than Chase Burns and Hagen Smith will make him appealing at some level. It's just a matter of like how teams are going to evaluate the delivery, how teams view the starter reliever profile moving forward. I think he's one of the more fun pitchers in this class just because of that, because he looks so unique, because the usage is so unique. He's just a fun guy to watch. Like entering the year, he was not a player that I was super high on, just because I thought it screamed reliever, and I'd agree with you. I think it's probably a reliever at the end of the day, but he keeps starting and performing, so you have to give that guy a shot at some point.
Yeah, no, I mean, like you said, there's no one really like him in this year's draft, which makes him a ton of fun to watch on top of the ability he has. So I'm with you. The low hanging fruit here is developing and trying to maximize the fastball, because it is a premium arm talent. He's got premium velo. It's all about what you can get and if you can make it more efficient and improve the shape. So
yeah,
that'll be one to watch as he progresses to pro ball.
For sure. All right, let's move on to Tennessee infielder. Shortstop, question mark, maybe probably a second baseman. But Christian Moore, his teammate Billy Amick has gotten a lot of love early in the season, rightfully so. He has trended up draft boards in a big way. But here Christian Moore is just doing the same thing he does every year, which is hit, get on base, hit for power. He's hit over 300 with a 440 or better OBP and a 600-plus slug every year. It's a 1,000-plus OPS every year for Tennessee. And he's doing it again this year. He's taken some steps forward early in the season, like all these hitters. It'll be interesting to see if those improvements really maintain themselves throughout conference play. But as we sit here today, he's hitting 350, 440, 720 with 10 home runs, 15 walks, 21 strikeouts. The strikeout rate is under 20% for the first time in his career. The walk rate is also down a tick, so I'll be curious to see where the plate discipline numbers sort of end up. But this is a guy who I feel like has always shown a really impressive bat offensively, and he continues to produce. It's more of a maybe traditional profile compared to a guy like Ryan Johnson. But he hits, and he hits well, and he's got some thunder in the bat, and he's got all-fields power. He was a guy that I really liked last summer at USA Baseball offensively, and the arm was a massive question mark for me then because he really wasn't throwing well. So then to see him slide over to shortstop early this year for Tennessee was kind of interesting, but it seemed like pretty quickly they slid him back over to second base. So Christian Moore, Peter, how excited should we be about him, and what are your thoughts on what he's done so far?
I'm pretty excited about him, and I think it's not like he's made some really positive adjustments, especially at the plate. And I know that's kind of crazy to say, given how well he's produced to this point, but there were some, at least for me, some approach concerns, particularly some pitch recognition concerns, at least last year. And just the overall hit tool, I was a little bit concerned about, but this year, both he's improved his bat to ball skills. The approach is shored up. And I know that there's still a month and a half, 2 months left in the season potentially. And, you know, that could change, but he has changed his look a little bit in the box. He's a little bit more into his lower half. He's raised his handset to more of a traditional kind of to like right above his right ear. I know trying to explain this, it's going to be hard to follow, but he's kind of deployed this move, and it looks, and I'm sure that they've worked together given that he's come on campus and like they were together all summer, but I'm sure he's worked with Billy Amick a little bit and just like picking his brain, because it does pre-swing look a little bit like Amick, and he's deployed this move, which I think is becoming a little bit more popular, where it's like you have this somewhat high handset with his hands like right at or above his ear. I'm like doing it like people can see, but
I can see Peter. It looks like, great.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm a day one guy as well. With the barrel kind of like with the back kind of pointed a little bit behind his back shoulder, and it's a move that I think has become a little bit more popular for guys to like pre-swing. It helps them get a little bit more into their lower half, and with more, it certainly paid dividends. Like, he's a super strong physical kid. There's bat speed there. I'd say the power is a 55. The hit is a 50, trending towards a 55, especially if he can, you know, the approach and the barrel skills maintained through SEC play. So I think that he's a guy as well who's slowly creeping up. I will say, to me, he's definitely a second baseman. Like I said, he's a really strong physical kid. He's a good athlete. He's just not a pro shortstop, which really isn't a huge wart on his profile. I don't think anyone has really viewed him as a shortstop throughout his time in college. So that's not a knock at all. And I think that he's a really, at least right now, solidly and trending up. He's a middle of the second round bat type, but
yeah, again, it would be really surprising if a guy like this somehow didn't go on day one, just considering the offensive performance he's consistently shown in the SEC.
I think he's a lock for day one. And like you said, and kind of the point that we've harped on, if he continues to hit and show these improvements as SEC play goes on, it's only going to help his stock. So I was, when digging in deep to Moore, and it was something that I noticed just watching him play in early March, like the different setup, but I wanted, once I actually dove deep on him, I was really encouraged to see improvements. One, and again, the pitch recognition skills, the contact ability, and then also this kind of new look in the box, which has clearly paid off for him. Yeah. I think those are three really positive checks, and he's got a chance to make himself a lot of money in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the mechanics. I didn't realize it was so different from what he did previously, but I was just looking at some video this year, and I thought he did a really nice job with that load, kind of that early handset, and then in his leg lift and during his load, it's a pretty easy and simple hand press into a load position. I thought he got into a good launch position well in time for the swing to start. So I like the way it looks just in general. But yeah, I think the contact improvements this year are the biggest step forward that like on paper you can see that he's made. In 2022 and 2023, he had a 35% overall miss rate. And in particular against secondaries, there was a lot of whiff. It was 40% plus miss rate on slider, curveball, and changeups. This year, the overall miss rate is down to 25% as we record this podcast, and it's a sub 30% miss rate on all pitch types. So he clearly has done a better job, at least again, early in the season against secondaries. We'll assume he's going to face more competitive secondary pitches throughout the year. So if he's able to maintain that, I think teams can feel pretty confident that he's made it a significant step forward in either just the bat to ball skills overall, or like you were talking about at the onset of this convo, just pitch recognition in general. Maybe it's as simple as that. So I really like the way the swing looks. He continues to perform. And when you get a middle infielder who's doing this in the SEC and hitting for power, that profile really doesn't last long, even if we don't think he's got a real chance to play on the left side of the infield. So Christian Moore at Tennessee, really both the Tennessee infielders getting a lot of positive steam so far this year. Peter, we have one other guy that I definitely wanted to mention, not to say this is the last guy we'll talk about, But another two-way player in the class, and I don't know if entering the year people thought of him as a two-way player, but Grant Nipp is quietly towards the top of – this is Campbell's Grant Nipp, catcher, DH, right-handed pitcher maybe is quietly near the top of the leaderboards in terms of home runs, in terms of WRC+. He is, I believe, second in the country right now behind only Charlie Condon and right ahead of Travis Bazzana with 15 home runs. Condon's at 17. Bazzana's tied with a few people at 14. He also, if you just look at WRC+, has a 256 mark. That's also second to Condon, who's at 276, and Travis Bazzana, who's at 249. Grant Nipp is a guy who's super fascinating. Yeah, go ahead and take it, Peter. What are
your thoughts? You keep going. No, keep going.
I just wanted to tee him up initially, but yeah, he's a catcher. He's a right-handed hitter with power. He's never really hit like this before. I think there's probably going to be some skepticism of what the actual hit tool is, but he's hitting 455, 593, slugging 1,156. He's got 24 walks and 22 strikeouts. And oh, by the way, he can throw 98 on the mound. So he's just a very fascinating player all around. And I'm curious to hear what you think about him.
Yeah, I'm happy we're talking about him because he quietly is putting together one of the more, I'd say, impressive seasons of anyone. Like you said, he's second in home runs. He's second in RBIs. I think even his 455 average is top five or six or so in the country. He's a super, super strong physical kid. You see it in the box. It's an extremely strong swing. I think it's probably plus power when all is said and done. But I kind of worry about the hit tool long term. I'm not super, super impressed with it. There's a little bit of chase. The bat to ball skills aren't all that impressive, which I know sounds crazy given what he's doing so far this year. But
there's a lot of swing and miss in there under the hood.
Yeah, I'm not super enthused with the hit tool. I think like the most intriguing part of the profile, honestly, is what he's able to do on the mound. And like you said, he was up to 98, and this was like he just hopped on the mound at the end of a scout day, I think it was, during the fall. I'd have to go back and double check the story because it's all on Twitter, but he just hopped on the mound at the end of a scout day, and I think was like popping 97s and 98s, and people were like, holy cow. And like, who is this kid? Because coming into this year, Nipp last year, he had a decent year by all accounts. He had a shade under 280 with 26 extra base hits, 13 home runs, 55 RBIs. But he's going nuclear this year. I'm not really sure where he fits from a draft standpoint, but he is kind of one of these fun, intriguing players that
he also is a little older for the class. He's basically going to be treated as a senior. I would imagine he'll be 22 and a half on draft day, I believe. So yeah, that element you're talking about, just him going nuclear, the two-way factor, I wouldn't be surprised at all if more scouts are excited about him on the mound, just given his arm talent and arm strength, in addition to maybe some questions about him as a catcher and some questions about that pure hit tool. I mean, if he keeps hitting, I feel like he'll only give himself a chance to hit at the next level if that's what he wants to do, because it's hard to argue the numbers. I think really this year, what has changed with him, at least compared to what he's done in previous years, is he's just putting the ball in the air a lot more frequently. In 2022, he had a 43% ground ball rate. In 2023, he had a 33% ground ball rate. So far in 24, that is just a 12.5% ground ball rate. Almost all of that has gone to just straight fly ball numbers. It's nearly 70% fly ball rate, which doesn't really seem sustainable. But for a guy with that sort of raw power, just simply getting the ball into the air when he does connect has translated into a lot of damage. I was asking around about how scouts view him defensively because I was trying to watch him and just get better feel for what I think about him. And I actually thought he looked okay behind the plate, but I feel like scouts who do a much better job at evaluating this behind the dish have some questions about just his mobility, his receiving, just kind of all the ingredients you need to catch at the next level. I think there are question marks. Unsurprisingly, the arm is pretty impressive behind the plate. I think it's an easy plus arm. I was getting consistent 1.9 to 2 second pop times in the looks that I was having with him. And again, I think there's probably room for improvement there if he's able to quicken up the exchange and get out of the squad a little bit quicker. So he's a very fascinating player, just given the performance, given the tools. He's only thrown on the mound a few times. It's four appearances out of the pen for Campbell. It's a 1.59 ERA, six strikeouts, one walk, six hits allowed. But he sat in the 94, 95 mile per hour range. He's done a decent job throwing strikes, especially for a guy with like no track record of pitching. He throws this hard power spike curveball in the low 80s. It's like 81 up to 83 with pretty good depth and finish. So if you're looking at a guy who maybe has a plus fastball and has a chance for an above average curveball who he's never really pitched before, it's a fascinating player, and the performance alone would make him notable, but the fact that there are some real tools here just makes him super, super intriguing.
Yeah, I'm with you. For as good as the offense has been, and maybe I'm way off, I'm like 100% in the camp, like in pro ball, that he's a pitcher, and I'm curious to see how the pitching develops because there's serious arm talent there. And I think he could be a pretty effective back end guy one day. So for me, he's no doubt an arm reliever for me at the next level.
I might, and I'm typically aligned with you on these things, but I might be more, I think just because of what I've seen, I'm more optimistic about him maybe figuring out catcher. And because it's so rare to get solid catchers and get catchers with these tools, I maybe would at least try him behind the dish and really quickly find out, like, if you think he has a chance to catch, maybe see what the hit tool looks like against pro pitching. And then be quick to move him to the mound if you don't think either the hit tool or the defense will be enough for the position. But I would be interested in him, I guess, on both sides either way.
Oh, yeah. And I'm with you that 100% he's going to get a chance to hit. He's going to get a chance to prove himself behind the dish. I think long term, I should have rephrased it to long term, I think he's definitely more of a pitcher and a hitter. But like you said, there are some mighty intriguing qualities about the offensive profile as well.
Yeah, and I guess as we see him continue to play some better competition throughout the year, it could be a case where he just got really hot and then we start to see more holes in the swing like we've seen in the past. But regardless, Grant Nipp has been a fun player and certainly a draft prospect at some level. I'll be really curious to see where he winds up going. Peter, those are all the players I wanted to make sure we hit on, but are there any other names you wanted to mention or any other draft topics? I saw earlier today on Twitter, I think Kendall Rogers with D1 Baseball said that J.J. Weatherholt was coming back in a few weeks. So that's big news. I hope that's the case. I hope he does come back. I think against Kansas was the projected series for him to come back. So that'll be fantastic if that does happen. But, yeah, anything else on the draft side you want to mention or players you want to talk about?
I mean, no, like you said, J.J. Weatherholt coming back is the big news. I believe it's next weekend, actually, against Kansas State. I would have to go back and look. Oh, yeah, here's Kendall's tweet. He does great work. Yep, next weekend against Kansas, he's back. So that's going to be
huge.
Awesome. And then other than that, I guess as any good host would do, there are a few more guys that I'd like to talk about, but I think we can save it for next week because there are a handful of others that I think are slowly kind of creeping their way up the board. A couple of arms, a couple of position guys.
Sweet.
Maybe even another prep guy or two. So
awesome. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Hope you guys enjoyed your opening day as you're listening to this podcast on Friday. If you didn't take in opening day, well, you got another day to catch up and 160 more of them after that. So thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting BA in general and listening to the podcast and reading the content online. We really appreciate that. For Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Small businesses come in many shapes and sizes, but the one thing they all have in common, the need to grow. With free guidance, knowledge, tools, and training, Vodafone VHub is here to help you and your business. Chat with a Vodafone VHub business advisor for free and get invaluable insight into how you could grow your business online. Search Vodafone VHub.